Hello, and welcome to the Driving Forward podcast. I am your host, Andrew Stasiowski of the American Highway Users Alliance. We have a great interview in the construction industry lined up for you today, but first, here are my three key points from the interview. First, inflation has been a significant problem for the construction industry. Estimates show about a 37% increase in the cost of construction materials since inflation started. That's compared to about 19% for consumer goods over the same period. Though costs have stabilized, there is no indication that they will come back down to where they were pre-inflation. This means that the IIJA will fund fewer projects than originally thought, and we will need to maintain IIJA funding levels in the next highway bill. Second, reforming the Highway Trust Fund is essential. We need to get away from general fund money. Finding a long-term solution to the Highway Trust Fund will not only give states the certainty of funding, it will allow the construction industry to invest in new equipment and add employees. Third, the Federal Highway Administration did not have congressional authority when it issued its greenhouse gas performance measurement rule. This rule penalizes states experiencing population and economic growth and discourages states from investing in new roads and bridges. And now, on to our interview. Joining us today is Alex Etchen. Alex is the Senior Director for Infrastructure Advancement with the Associated General Contractors of America. AGC is the voice of the construction industry. Their members build everything from roads and bridges to airports, military bases, schools, and hospitals. Alex, welcome to the Driving Forward podcast.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So I think, like we like to do on this podcast, just hoping you could talk about the construction industry as a whole. How big are you? You know, what is your industry's impact on the economy? Just kind of give us an overview of what AGC does.
So AGC represents construction companies all across the country. We have about 27,000 firms in total that all belong to AGC chapters across the country. So we have about 89 of those represent union and open shop construction companies. And by nature, the construction industry, I like to remind people, is very small business. About 91% of construction companies have 20 or fewer employees.
Oh, wow. That's unexpected. So we're a little over 2 years into the IIJA. What has been the impact of the law on the construction industry?
Sure. So, you know, the last year, 2 years have really been marked by managing inflation. We've seen the price of construction materials increase by about 37% since 2020, nearly twice as high as the rate of consumer inflation, which was about 19% during that same period. And according to the Federal Highway Administration, construction costs have been hit even harder, and we've seen about a 50% increase since December of 2020. Specifically, some of those materials I was going to highlight were just, you know, we've seen an increase in 113% in the price of diesel, 60% increase in the price of steel mills, 44% increase in the price of gypsum, which is, you know, used in drywall, and a 31% increase in the price of cement. So I flagged that before I get into the IIJA because, you know, I know the IIJA included these large funding for our transportation assets, but really a lot of it has been absorbed by inflation. And I also want to flag that because, you know, without the IIJA, the past 2 years, I think you would have seen state departments of transportation cutting their budgets by 20 to 30% in terms of the projects that they were able to let out for construction.
So with all that inflation, have you seen, how's that been on the construction phase itself? Has that caused states to reduce the number of projects they're building or slow down some of the projects that they may have done? Instead of doing three, they're going to do two. How has that kind of played out on your end?
Yeah. So in the beginning, it really caused chaos, if you will, because what was happening is before a state DOT lets these projects, they have what they call an engineer's estimate. So they've looked at these projects and think it's going to cost X. And you were having these bids come in from construction companies that were 30, 40, 50% over what these engineers had estimated. So they had to pull back on projects. I think now we've seen inflation really level off. So there's a little bit more certainty there. I do flag, you know, our members have reported to us, they haven't seen the cost of these construction materials necessarily come down significantly, but the inflation has stopped. talking more specifically on the IIJA, the other thing I'll say is, you know, as you and I know, everybody, once they pass an infrastructure bill, want to have ribbon cuttings and want to, you know, have new assets to show their constituents. But, you know, these projects take time. And Congress and the White House really got it right this time. You know, if you remember back to the Recovery Act, and I think it was 2009, they put in a stipulation that the projects had to be, quote, shovel ready, which really limited the types of projects that could be built. So you had a lot of bridge painting, a lot of basic repaving of roadways, but you didn't really get the large infrastructure projects. You didn't get like the Brent Spence bridges, if you will. So flash forward to the IIJA, they got it right. They provided 5 years of dedicated funding, increased funding for these states to plan long-term projects. And what you've seen, though, is that, you know, funding for these projects is just one part of the equation. There's other project readiness factors that go into that. You know, the project has to have gone through engineering. It has to have gone through NEPA. It has to have permits. So we're really just starting to see these larger infrastructure projects come to fruition. You know, the first 2 years really were a lot of repaving and repair work, if you will.
I've heard that from our members that, you know, the projects are being put out for bid, but they're not actually really being funded. Are they starting to be funded more now?
Yes, we actually had one of our members was just in Washington testifying before the Transportation Committee, and she was asked about this. You know, have you seen a large influx of projects? And before coming, she spoke directly with her state DOT, and they said, you know, we're anticipating 2024 and 2025 to be much bigger construction projects where a lot of these larger infrastructure projects are able to start, finally break ground.
That's good to hear. So another thing you mentioned, and I it's an issue we've worked on a lot in the last year, has been NEPA. There was multiple efforts by CEQ in the last year to get involved in NEPA. What has been your take on the efforts to shorten the NEPA timeline?
Andrew, this is one of the biggest issues we hear from our members. You know, when we report to them all of these bills that have been signed into law that have provisions in them to streamline these processes. And, you know, the IIJA had provisions, the Fiscal Responsibility Act, you know, efforts to streamline the process, establish a lead federal agency, create timelines, page limits, limit who can file lawsuits protesting a NEPA decision. And what we've really seen is that the administration has really cherry-picked which provisions they're going to implement and further cherry-picked whether they're going to actually enforce them. The other big challenge is, and this goes for a lot of agencies, you really need somebody at all of these agencies to champion these NEPA reforms. You know, somebody to remind project sponsors that there's been changes made, that, you know, you're not allowed to relocate utilities before a final record of decision. You know, remind agencies that they can, you know, use each other's categorical exclusions. And we really haven't seen that happen yet.
Okay, shifting gears a bit, and I think you touched on it a little bit earlier when you're talking about the difference between the IIJA and the Recovery Act. But we're about 2 years in. Obviously, we're looking at the next highway bill already, the highway users. Given what we have learned during the IIJA, what are your thoughts on the needs for the next highway bill to continue to move forward with, you know, getting more projects built and in that sense?
You know, the IIJA really represents the biggest infusion of investment in our infrastructure since the interstate highway system in about the mid-1950s. And while this is a huge success, you have to look at the data. And the trip data out there shows that about 40% of the roads in the United States are still in poor or mediocre condition. This ends up costing the average driver about $621 a year in the form of repairs, accelerated vehicle depreciation, increased fuel consumption, and tire wear. So you factor that in with the increase in electric vehicles within the nation's fleet. These EVs are heavier than their internal combustion engine counterparts. They're causing greater wear and tear on the roadways. So there's really no question that the needs are going to be there. So looking at the next highway bill, you know, first off, I would stress that there's going to be the need to preserve the highway trust fund and avoid relying on the annual appropriations process to ensure that road and bridge projects are not subject to government shutdowns or spending cuts. You know, for the Highway Trust Fund for construction companies is really important. It provides certainty to these construction companies that there's years of funding in the pipeline. So it provides them certainty to invest in new construction equipment, hire new workers. It provides certainty to the actual workers themselves or people considering getting into that field that there's going to be work ahead.
No, I think that's a great answer. And I think, you know, you mentioned the trust fund and the concerns there. We are in 100% agreement. And something we've been talking about on this podcast with some of our other guests. And so what are your concerns with the stability of the trust fund? You know, what would happen if we just didn't do anything and let it just continue to go as it is?
AGC really supports the user fee, user pay system. You know, we believe it's very fair. Users are essentially paying for what they use. Because, you know, the gas tax was not indexed to inflation, you know, we have increased fuel efficiency. What we've seen is that over the last 30 years, the Highway Trust Fund has lost purchasing power. Now, you factor in an increase in electric vehicles, and we're really hitting a point where the Highway Trust Fund relying more and more on a general fund transfer into the Highway Trust Fund, which of course Congress requires that there has to be a pay for that general fund transfer. That makes it much more challenging to get these bills done. You know, we believe that highway bills would, you know, this wouldn't be a once in a generation transportation bill, as they've been calling it, and instead the norm if there wasn't this need to scrap together pay fors.
I know we always kind of put a cost estimate to, you know, the ability to bring our roads and bridges into full repair. Do you know what that number is these days?
I haven't seen. So the number I have actually looked at in the past has been from the Federal Highway Administration's Conditions and Performance Report. They haven't released a new issue of that report, but it was, you know, prior to the IIJA, I believe it was almost $800 billion in a backlog of repairs. Now, again, the IIJA is going to make a dent in that, but we still have a long way to go.
Right. So we need to find a funding source that's going to continue IIJA funding levels, but be solidified. We need, you know, real hard money, not general fund, as you talked about, especially as we look into the next decade where, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, interest on the debt's going to really start to take a big chunk out of the available general fund. So, you know, we agree there needs to be a reform that can kind of move us into the new era of, you know, vehicle and funding sources and all of that for the Highway Trust Fund. Another issue on highway investment and how we're allocating our funds, you know, the House and Senate have introduced a joint resolution of disapproval for the Federal Highway Administration's greenhouse gas performance measurement rule. And what are your thoughts on the GHG rule and how would it impact road construction?
Well, I want to start by saying, you know, AGC believes that the administration doesn't have the statutory authority to issue this rule. This is a proposal that's been around for years. Congress has repeatedly debated this topic and repeatedly rejected it. So starting there, I'll just reiterate, we don't believe they have that authority. Now, you'll hear them say a lot of times that, you know, they're requiring states to set declining carbon dioxide emissions and that there's, quote, no penalty if they don't hit those targets. However, the rule does state that they have to submit a plan to the Federal Highway Administration that is backed up by data on how they will hit those targets in the future. That means this is definitely going to have an impact on states' project selections going forward. It is going to favor more climate change friendly projects like bike paths, electric vehicle chargers, procurement of buses, investment in Amtrak trains over investing in roads and bridges.
Yeah, I think one of the concerns we've also had with this is, you know, as you have areas that are seeing large growth, you know, I don't know why I always pick Nashville, but I pick Tennessee a lot in this area. A lot of people are moving there. That means a lot more economic activity, which you're going to naturally need more trucks, more cars, more, you know, more roads to accommodate that. I don't see how a place like, you know, a Nashville or any growing area can be in compliance with, you know, the declining measurement that they're requiring in this rule. What do you think?
You're absolutely right. You know, I always use the example of New York. If New York has to reduce its carbon dioxide emissions, a very easy way for them to do that will be to invest in the New York City subway. you know, add capacity, add stops, get people to ride it more. A lot of these other cities do not have a large legacy transit system like New York that they can invest in. So they're therefore relying on encouraging people to get out of their cars and onto a public transit bus, or they're encouraging them to bike to work, or encouraging them to get an electric vehicle. Back to our witness that was here testifying from Wyoming, you know, she gave the example of two towns that are about 20 miles apart. And in one town, it can be, you know, 60 degrees and snowing in the other town because it's, you know, in the mountains. And she said, how are they going to bike to work in that scenario? So you're truly relying on electric vehicles. And at that point, you know, there are very pre-established, grounded opinions on electric vehicles in this country. And trying to convince some of these people to give up their internal combustion engine vehicle in exchange for an electric one is going to be challenging. So you're absolutely right that this rule really treats every state the same, which is really something AGC objected to, because these more rural states are emitting a fraction of the greenhouse gas emissions as these more populous states and have fewer options to reduce them.
You know, we had Chris Spear on last month, and you know, I think he talked a lot about how we've gone so far in, you know, in our manufacturing space on trucks and cars to really reduce the amount of greenhouse gas that are coming out of the new vehicles. And to me, it seems like we're just continuing down the road of penalizing growth and penalizing innovation without really thinking about how we can make this work better. So another issue that I know is out there that I wanted to talk to you about, which is Buy America. There's a recent hearing on Buy America, and I know there's been a lot of confusion with kind of the new standards coming out of the administration as it relates to IIJA projects. So what is going on there and how is that impacting construction projects?
You know, every member I talk to of AGC is all in on bringing back domestic manufacturing in this country. Unfortunately, the challenge construction companies face is whenever they decide to bid on a project, they go to their suppliers to get quotes for different materials. And when they get these materials from them, they'll get what they call a Buy America certification letter. You know, in transportation space at USDOT, they've been dealing with these Buy America requirements for decades at this point. Now, the IIJA expanded these iron and steel Buy America requirements into construction materials. This is a very broad expansion of this policy. And I would stress this is going to take years to see the benefits of the U.S. manufacturing brought back. This is not going to be the flick of a switch. One of the challenges we've seen is the Office of Management and Budget, who has the Made in America office, has put out conflicting guidance from time to time, often, you know, 6 months apart, a year apart. And what it's really created confusion. And so what it means for our members, again, who aren't suppliers, is they go to their suppliers, and instead of getting a Buy America certification letter, they get a quote with an asterisk denoting that they cannot certify that these materials will be Buy America compliant. So what that does for a contractor is it really creates a lot of uncertainty. Do you choose to go forward with bidding on the project that you're not sure that you're going to be able to get the materials needed that are Buy America compliant? And what it usually means is that you've got to account for that uncertainty in your bid, which means higher bids to make sure you don't lose your shirt if you choose to go forward with this project.
So if you do get, let's say, because of the uncertainty with the letter that say they can't guarantee it will meet that, what if you move forward and you get the products, but then what happens? How does that work in the construction phase if what you're using is actually not compliant? Does that just, you have to restart? How does that work?
No, that's a great question. So you have to get what they call a Buy America waiver. And again, since we've had these requirements at USDOT for almost 40 years, this is something that there's a history of. And that history is that process can be very opaque and very slow. You know, oftentimes, just recently, about past summer, in I think it was August of 2023, they put up a notice that they had received a Buy America waiver at Federal Highways from a request from the Illinois DOT for some pumps. And in the request, they noted that the waiver was received by Federal Highways in May of 2021. So that for 2 years, they had this waiver that they never put out for public comment. Once they did put it out for public comment, it appears that there's a manufacturer in the U.S. that says that they make those pumps that are Buy America compliant and could help. And so again, you know, why didn't they publish it? Well, to even publish the waiver request for public comment, it has to go up all the way through the Office of the Secretary and over to the Office of Management and Budget in the White House. And to us, that's absurd. I mean, that is like making every public school principal send up a sick note from a parent and get sign off by the Secretary of the Department of Education. I mean, or, you know, as our member pointed out, that would be like me being the CEO of a construction company of 400 people and having to approve every single PTO request for every single employee.
Right. So this sounds like something that, you know, as we look at the next highway bill, there's some opportunities to maybe clear this up and have Congress really tell the administration how we should be implementing this. Is that something that you think should be done?
Yes, we believe that we need to, the term we keep using is we need to depoliticize the process. And how you depoliticize the process is let the people who know the projects out in the field make the decisions on this. You know, for example, right now I mentioned all the waiver requests are going all the way up to the White House. The Federal Highway Administration has a division office in each state. These division offices are familiar with the state DOTs, the roadways, the projects. Let them be the determiner of whether it merits a Buy America waiver.
That makes a lot of sense. All right, so we're going to move into our last question. This is a question we've asked every guest so far, and we've had some fun answers, so I wanted to hear what your take is. If you had the ability to do one thing, wave your magic wand and do one thing to really help and improve the construction industry in America, what would it be?
But you're asking about improve the construction industry?
Yeah, your portion of the infrastructure highway bill.
Well, I would give two answers to that, actually, if I'm allowed. You know, first, establish a sustainable user fee and get back to a system where everybody pays for what they use. And we have a real opportunity, the growth of electric vehicles. We don't have a huge market penetration yet, and it would be an opportune time to come up with a sustainable user fee. The second would be to bring back earmarks. I think if you can get members of Congress and get more engaged with specific projects in their district and have a skin in the game and an interest in helping those specific projects move forward, it will help highway bills move more.
You know, I remember one year doing a highway bill as a staffer. That was a very big point of discussion among many of the former longer-term members of Congress who I think would definitely agree with you on that. Well, Alex Etchen, thank you so much for coming on the Driving Forward podcast. Hope to have you on again sometime soon.
Yes, thank you, Andrew.
All right. Well, I thought that was a great interview with Alex today. I really appreciate him coming on. I hope everyone learned a lot about the construction industry. Please continue to listen to the Driving Forward podcast wherever you get your podcasts.